Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter Telegram, weekend edition, Saturday, April 8th, 2023. Q&A with new Texas Tech Regent Tim Culp by Stuart Doreen. Tim Culp is set to become the fifth Midlander to serve on the Texas Tech University System's Board of Regents later this spring. Last month, Governor Greg Abbott appointed Culp the president, CEO, and owner of Southwest Royalties, Inc. and Desert Production, Inc. as one of the three new board members to serve a six-year term. Culp's appointment is subject to confirmation by the Texas Senate before he officially takes the oath of office and starts his tenure on the board. If confirmed, Culp would be the first Midlander to serve since Mickey Long, 2009 to 2021. His first board meeting is expected to be in May. The appointment marks the next step in a long journey that started growing up in Andrews. Both Tim and his wife, high school sweetheart Annette Lee Culp, were graduates of Texas Tech University. Three of their children also attended Texas Tech. The following is part of an interview with Tim, who has lived in Midland for 41 years and remains involved in the community. MRT, what does it mean to be appointed to the Board of Regents? Tim Culp, this is just the pinnacle of any service opportunity I've ever had. It's extremely humbling to be appointed by the governor. I love Texas Tech. I've had a huge passion for Texas Tech my entire life. My family would go to football games on Saturdays, and I always wanted to go to Texas Tech, and now I've got the honor to serve them. I've served on several committees and boards for Texas Tech for the last 12 to 15 years. I know most of the leaders up there, the chancellor and the presidents of each of our component institutions, and so I still have a huge learning curve, but it's going to be a little bit less just because of my knowledge of the institution. MRT, why is it important to have somebody from Midland on the Texas Tech University system? Tim Culp, one of my sales pitches to the governor multiple times was with our proximity in the Permian Basin, not just Midland and not just Odessa, but the Permian Basin to Texas Tech. I thought it was huge that we have a representative here. Texas Tech is very, very important to the Permian Basin, and the Permian Basin is very, very important to Texas Tech for a variety of reasons. If you look at the facilities that Midland Odessa currently has, we have the nursing school in Odessa, we have the mental health facility here in Midland, and we had the physician assistant school in Midland, plus other small areas of importance to Texas Tech down here. And I think there's ways to expand that, especially in the medical field. As you probably know, the Permian Strategic Partnership is looking for a huge medical facility in the Permian Basin, maybe between Midland and Odessa, and I think Texas Tech can play a large role in that. MRT, what has happened maybe in the last 5 to 10 years that really has you excited about the direction in the university system? Tim Culp, well, let me talk about athletics first. Our football coach, Joey McGuire, and that's not at the top of the list, but it's in the top 4 or 5. I'm very athletically minded, and getting Joey McGuire on board is going to be a huge plus for Texas Tech. Already is. We're going to continue to see growth and excitement and the rallying of the fan base for the first time in a long time, and that's needed. Athletics are a great primer for academics. When you went to the Final Four in 2019, we had that drove applications up, so then we could obviously be more selective on who we're taking into the university. And I think the same is going to be true for the football program. It's going to be a great, great emphasis to the university and great catalyst for additional enrollment. We just hired Grant McCaslin, who's going to be our new basketball coach, and he has Midland ties. And of course, he was at Baylor and Arkansas State for a while, and he was at Tech. He got his master's at Tech, and he married a former Tech soccer player. So we got someone with West Texas ties, and it's exciting to have a semi-quasi-West Texan back to lead the basketball program. That'll be fun. Academically, I've seen tremendous change and improvement in the leadership at Texas Tech in the last 10 to 12 years. We've had a chancellor. His name is Ted Mitchell, and I would put him up against any chancellor in the nation. He is unbelievable in his communication skills, his leadership skills. He's a doctor. He was a former president of our health sciences center. Now we have a former Odessa woman, Lori Rice Spearman, is the current president of the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in Lubbock, and she's phenomenal. But just the leadership that I've seen in the last 10 to 12 years and the direction that they have the university going on with research, endowments, bringing in outstanding provosts and professors from all over the country. The bar has been raised at Texas Tech primarily because of our current leadership, and I'm really excited about the academic progress we've made. When I attended Texas Tech in the late 70s, we had around 17,000 or 18,000 students in Lubbock at the undergraduate level. We've seen over 40,000 for the last few semesters, and while college and university enrollment is declining nationwide, in Texas it is not. And not just Tech, but UT and A&M have continued to see moderate growth in enrollment and applications over the years when nationwide it is declining. MRT, what are the things you want to accomplish before leaving the board? Tim Culp. One thing I have not mentioned is the funding for all public universities other than UT and A&M being part of the PUF, Permanent University Fund, is very disproportionate. And we've made a huge push in recent legislative sessions, including this, the 88th legislative session, to get additional funding, not just for Texas Tech, but for University of Houston, University of North Texas, Texas State, etc. The numbers are mind-boggling, the millions of dollars more that go to those two universities. This was all set up by the legislature 150 years ago in 1876, but with a $33 billion surplus that the state has, we are hoping that we're going to get a larger allocation of that budget, and that's all going to be determined in the next 2 months. I'm not asking to be on a level playing field by any means. We'll never be on a level playing field as long as we're not part of the PUF, but at least allocate more of the higher education funds to Texas Tech and the universities I mentioned. So that would be one huge goal that I hope when I leave in 6 years that we're getting a larger share of the higher education funding. One of my primary goals is college affordability. I've seen what it costs to pay for public education, public universities in this state. It's getting harder and harder for the average family to fund education. So what happens is those kids come out of college and universities with debt. I want to try to find a way through additional higher education, funding additional school, scholarships, grants, maybe some federal assistance to get that cost down. I paid $4.50 a semester hour when I graduated because it was all state regulated, right? It was $7.25 a semester hour when I graduated in 1981. Now it's over $100 a semester hour at Texas Tech, and some universities are considerably higher than that. Lastly, I really want to expand the footprint of Texas Tech in the Permian Basin. I've been involved with the spring football scrimmages in Midland. the baseball team has come down several times to play at the baseball stadium, so we have expanded the athletic footprint as well as the academic and health. I think we have unlimited potential. We need to improve the health and care in our area, and we're making tremendous strides, and the PSP is going to do great things for us, and I want to tech to be part of that. MRT, what's your all-time favorite Texas Tech memory? Tim Culp. That's an easy one. When Tech beat UT in 2008, and the Graham Harrell to Michael Crabtree touchdown with seconds left in the game did it. So as I said, I'm athletically minded. I'm sure if I thought hard about it, I could come up with an academic one, but I'm going to have to dig pretty deep. But that'd be my all-time favorite memory. And number two was going for the Final Four in Minneapolis in 2019, and Tech lost to Virginia in overtime. But that's a close second. Those were just wonderful times. We had family there and got to share some wonderful times. Tim Culp File, married to Annette Lee Culp for 41 years, high school sweetheart, raised four children in Midland, three went to Texas Tech, currently has six grandchildren and counting, resident of Midland, Texas for 41 years, president and CEO and owner of Southwest Royalties, Inc. and Desert Production, Inc. Culp earned a bachelor's degree in accounting from TTU in 1981 and is the chairman of Texas Tech University System Foundation Board, Texas Tech University System Foundation Board member, Texas Tech University Athletics Committee member, First Methodist Church Midland member, committee chairman, former board members of board at Midland Chamber of Commerce, Midland Fair Havens, Samaritan Counseling Center, Permian Basin Petroleum Association, Multiple Sclerosis Society, Midland, Tech Regents from Midland, Midlanders on the Texas Tech System Board of Regents, Julia Evitz Haley, 1923-27 and 1933-39, James L. Lindsay, 1953-1962, Joe Pevhouse, 1979-1985, Mickey Long, 2009-21, Tim Culp, 2023-2029. Exxon Pioneer Talk Possible Deal, WSJ. Exxon has held preliminary talks with Pioneer Natural Resources Company over possible acquisition by Chien Shin. Oil giant ExxonMobil Corporation has held preliminary talks with Pioneer Natural Resources Company over a possible acquisition of the company, the Wall Street Journal reported, citing people with knowledge of the matter. Talks are informal and there is no formal process, the newspaper reported, adding that any possible deal would come together only later this year or next year. Exxon has also discussed a potential tie-up with at least one other company as the explorer hunts for a blockbuster deal in shale, according to the newspaper. Shares of Texas-based Pioneer, one of the largest independent U.S. oil producers, have fallen nearly 9% this year, giving it a valuation of $49 billion. Chief Executive Officer Scott Sheffield has in recent years been on an acquisition spree, purchasing Parsley Energy and Double Point Energy since 2020. Pioneer Natural Resources, which concentrates its activities in the Midland Basin, is the largest producer in that basin, according to the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus. In its recent earnings call to discuss its fourth quarter 2022 earnings, the company said it expects to produce a total of 670 to 700 million barrels of oil in 2023, or 352,000 to 372,000 barrels per day. Exxon, whose shares have gained 4% this year, has a market capitalization of $468 billion. Po Chop's Munchie Shack is More Than Good Food by Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the corner of Big Spring Street and Rhode Island Avenue sits a modest black food truck with red detailing inside. Ernesto and Nikki Galindo seamlessly work around the closet-sized kitchen, cooking up some of the best meal-sized snacks Midland can offer. Growing up as a kid, my dad and his cousin would get hired by everybody to make the wedding barbacoa, and I would always wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning just to go with them, Ernesto explained. But by looking at them, I learned how to cook. During the pandemic, the husband and wife duo decided to combine their dream of owning a business with their childhood love for cooking, ultimately forming Po Chop's Munchie Shack. Named after Ernesto's nickname from his time in the oil field, the truck specializes in meat and bountiful flavors. Po Chop's Munchie Shack can be found at 1110 South Big Spring Street from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. most days of the week. Family obligations and holidays change the schedule, so make sure to follow Po Chop's on Facebook at https://bit.ly/3UGGYQQ to know when and where they'll be. Hot Bite. You can't go to Po Chop's and not find something to munch on. Between 12-inch burgers, loaded fries, sweets, and more, bellies and eyes leave the food truck full and wide. Menu items include Pancho Villa burger and fries, asada fries loaded high with meats, sauces, and asada, hot Cheeto burger, melted cheese and hot Cheetos, loaded hot Cheetos, armadillo burger, hood special, 2 corn dogs with hot Cheetos, Philly sandwich, tacos al pastor, Hawaiian burger, tropical flavors such as pineapple piled high, buffalo fries with chicken, flautas, pastor hot Cheetos, lonche, long submarine-styled loaded sandwiches, tostadas, and chick-fried steak sandwiches. For dessert, fried Oreos and churros with chocolate sauce and strawberries. My personal favorite, barbecue chicken, loaded fries, covered with cheese, and other delicious goodness. Note, most of the loaded French fry options can have eater's choice of chicken, beef, pork, or brisket. Overall vibes, beyond the good food, Ernesto and Nikki are prime examples of what it is to be a family-oriented working crew in Midland. Not only did they take the risk of opening their own business, but they're doing it all on their own while still raising their kids. That post-lunch rush break, not to reorganize, but to pick up their kids from school and to show them they're still number one priority. Although they just opened February 8, Po Chop's contains a roster of repeat and dedicated customers. Why? Because everything Ernesto and Nikki do comes from their love of the community and their love for what they do. People like Ernesto and Nikki make the tall city a place people want to live, support, and be an active member of. And without them, we'd just be a boring old dust town. DPS, man fleeing from crash involved in fatal collision on SH-349. A Midland man died Wednesday after a collision south of Midland on State Highway 349, according to the Department of Public Safety. The DPS reported Alexis Anguinaga Rodriguez, 19, was traveling north in a 2011 GMC Terrain when he attempted to turn onto County Road 121. It was then that an 18-year-old Midlander driving a 2011 Chevrolet Impala south on SH-349 struck Anguinala Rodriguez's vehicle on the passenger side. DPS reported both drivers were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital for injuries sustained during the crash. DPS troopers also reported that the driver of the Impala was traveling south on SH-349 at a high rate of speed as it fled from a previous crash inside the city limits of Midland. An accident happened less than a mile of city limits at around 6:29 p.m., according to DPS. Both drivers were wearing seatbelts. The fatality is the 12th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. Two people died in three-vehicle collision on SH-158. A Midlander and Miami, Florida woman died at the scene of a three-vehicle collision Tuesday southeast of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported on Friday that Guillermo del Poza Fernandez, 42, of Midland, and Yulselvi Sanchez Mora, 42, of Miami, died when a 2019 Ford F-350 struck the rear of the 2017 Chevrolet Spark they were traveling in. The collision on State Highway 158 forced the Chevrolet Spark into the westbound lane where it was struck by a 2017 Chevrolet Silverado. The collisions took place around 6:27 a.m. Tuesday, 3.8 miles southeast of Midland. Del Pozo Fernandez was not wearing a seatbelt. The other drivers, both from Midland, were taken to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition, according to DPS. There were both the 13th and 14th deaths reported from fatality accidents inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. Two Midlanders make Bloomberg's billionaires list by Stuart Doreen. Two Midlanders made Bloomberg's list of billionaires. Autry Stevens again made the list of net worth of $10 billion and a ranking of 182nd in the world, down from 197th last year. The 85-year-old Stevens also ranked 65th among billionaires in the United States, this time behind ranked Walmart heiress Christy Walton. Stevens made his fortune founding Endeavor Energy Resources, drilling his first well in 1979 and growing the company into one of the largest private oil and gas producers in the country, generating some 200,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. Worldwide, Forbes ranked Stevens 179th among billionaires. Making an appearance on the list is Tim Dunn and family. Dunn is the founder and CEO of CrownQuest. Bloomberg reported Dunn's wealth at $1.3 billion, which ranked 2,133rd worldwide. The rankings show this to be Dunn's first time on the list going back 5 years. Raised in Big Spring, Dunn graduated from Texas Tech University with a degree in chemical engineering. His first industry job was with Exxon Production Research Company in Houston. His career path took him to First City Bank Corporation, then to Parker and Parsley Petroleum, now Pioneer Natural Resources, before he went out on his own, founding Crown Quest Operating in 1996. He serves Crown Quest as Chief Executive Officer. Texas Permian Buck U.S. Trend by Adding Rigs by Mella McEwen. Uncertainty over the direction of the economy prompted another slowdown in drilling activity. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes, which has reported its rig count weekly since 1944, said Thursday, a day early because of the holiday, its U.S. rig count fell 4 to 751, marking a second weekly decline. Still, the count is 62 rigs, or 9% higher than the 689 Baker Hughes reported a year earlier. The number of rigs seeking crude fell to 2 to 590, 44 more than 546 last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also fell by 2 to 158, 17 more than the 141 drilling for natural gas last April. Texas bucketed the national trend, eking up one rig to 377, 35 more than the 342 rigs active across the state last year. Texas was the only producing state to see an increase for the week. New Mexico fell one rig to 103, Colorado 1, Louisiana 1, North Dakota 1, and Oklahoma 1 joined New Mexico as producing states to experience declines. The Permian Basin also bucked the national trend, adding one rig for 353 drilling across the region, 21 more than the 332 reported the previous April. The Permian was the only producing basin to see an increase. Eddy County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 55 rigs, up one for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, continued its decline, dropping 2 rigs to 47. Reeves County reported 42 rigs for a second week, while Martin County was close behind with 41 rigs, up 1. Loving County added a rig for 28 rigs at work with county lines. Midland County had 27 rigs, unchanged for the week. Howard County reported 20 rigs, up 1. Upton County reported 19 rigs for the fourth consecutive week, followed by Reagan County with 10 rigs, up 1. Crockett County saw renewed activity this week with the addition of 1 rig, while Crane County saw no activity after losing its 1 rig. Enverus Foundations, part of the Energy Focus software as a service firm, Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 833 during the week ended April 5th, falling by 4 from the previous week. The count is down 2% in the last month and up 8% year over year. In major plays, Enverus Foundation said all but 1 reported declines. The Gulf Coast had the largest decline, losing 9 to 98, followed by Anadarko, dropping 2 to 74. The remaining regions lost 1 rig each. The Permian was the only major play to gain week over week, adding 1 rig for a total of 347.
OPEC's shock cut is a reaction to oil's decline, by David Fickling, Bloomberg Opinion. What does it look like when the world's biggest oil producers capitulate to the decline of their key product? We're seeing it today. The surprise weekend announcement by the OPEC Plus grouping of more than 1.1 million barrels of production cuts on top of the 500,000 daily barrels already declared by Russia last month knocks bullish forecasts for oil consumption on their head. Most had been expecting the current sluggish conditions, which drove Brent crude to a 15-month low March 19th, would be replaced by voracious appetites from consumers in the second half of the year as air and road traffic finally recovered to pre-pandemic levels. Demand in the December quarter would rise to 103.5 million barrels a day, the International Energy Agency reported last month, 2.2 million barrels above its current levels and well ahead of supply. Those conditions should, in theory, be sufficient to juice prices all on their own without any intervention from OPEC. With declining inventories leading to a rush for remaining supplies, it seems now that ministers from the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries don't see it that way. On one level, the new supply cuts are a clear bearish signal for a short-term demand, even if patchy observance means they only amount to 1 million barrels or so. The implied deficit in global oil supplies in the second half of the year would be on par with what we saw during 2021, when crude prices roughly doubled to their current level of around $80 a barrel. It's hard to see OPEC countenancing such a drastic tightening in the name of market stability. More likely, producers are following the consensus of traders, who pushed crude down 4.9% last month, that some of the promised second-half demand is unlikely to materialize. What's more telling, though, is what the announcement says about long-term demand. OPEC Plus, in particular, its core members in the Gulf, will have the lowest operating costs in the global sector in perpetuity. In a growing or stable market, they should be using their record profits to build their share of upstream production, while keeping prices comfortable enough that consumers aren't encouraged to change their behavior in a way that will harm the market, flying less, for instance, or buying a Tesla instead of a gas-guzzling truck. That's not how they're behaving right now. Take the view of these production cuts that's least bearish for short-term demand, that OPEC Plus still expects strong second-half oil consumption, but is simply greedy for more oil revenue. That wouldn't be an irrational way to behave, since the increase in prices might more than compensate for the decline in output from key members. The question, then, is why those countries want more oil cash, and what they plan to do with it. In Saudi Arabia, the biggest player, the money very clearly isn't mainly going into building additional production capacity. During annual results last month, Saudi Arabian Oil Chief Executive Officer Amin Nasser, was unyielding in rebutting analysts' suggestions that the company should be using its $159 billion in net income to upgrade its spending plans. Capital expenditure will instead level off around the middle of this decade, with only half of the total dedicated to boosting output and no plans to build capacity beyond 13 million barrels a day. That represents a modest increase from current levels, especially when inflation is taken into account. What we've seen instead is a flurry of investments in everything except new crude output. $7 billion for a refinery in China last week, $8.5 billion in contracts signed in February to build a green hydrogen plant near the NEOM planned city close to the Jordanian border, 33 billion reals, $8.8 billion, for new tourist facilities on the Red Sea, and another $50 billion for another development on the outskirts of the capital, Riyadh. In total, the government expects some $1.3 trillion to be invested by 2030, with the goal of diversifying the economy away from oil production. Profits for the world's lowest-cost oil producers are beyond handsome at the moment, but unlike previous booms, they're not reinvesting that money in their future. While the number of operating rigs in the U.S. have more or less returned to pre-pandemic levels, in the Middle East, they're struggling to break above three-quarters of previous numbers. OPEC Plus wants more cash from the oil market, but it doesn't think expanding production is the best way to go about that. That's a bullish sign for prices, but on the demand front, it's as bearish a prognostication as you can imagine.
Chop Champions Curbside Bistro Expanding into Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Beloved food truck turned brick-and-mortar curbside bistro, along with its reigning Chop Champion and owner Alejandro Barrientos, will expand into Midland in 2023. Alejandro and his wife Stephanie will be taking over the building lease located at 607 North Colorado Street, aka Mr. Chips. After searching for a location for months, the duo found the establishment and starting leasing within a span of 2 weeks. Barrientos told the Reporter Telegram that the Midland location will continue the same delicious food and good vibes as the Odessa original, all topped off with the eccentric artwork created by a local talent. An opening date has not been set. Stay up to date with the restaurant at facebook.com, Curbside Bistro 2014.
Bethlehem, Galilee, Gethsemane by Mary Leah and Ken Marks Family Trust. Bethlehem, he was born there, I believe. I believe Galilee. Jesus walked there, I believe. I believe Gethsemane. My Savior prayed there on Calvary. He died alone, but the tomb, he left there, I believe. I believe, yes, I believe. I believe Bethlehem. He was born there. There was nothing sacred about that manger in Bethlehem. Jesus could have been born in the best hotel room in the city if it had been left open for him. But he wasn't pushy. He still isn't. He moves only into the places we vacate for him. There was room that night only in the stable. So that's where he was born. Galilee. Jesus walked there, I believe. I believe Jesus walked with common men, but there was nothing common about his words. They upset every comfortable ethic. He upset judicial systems when he said, "Love those who hate you." He upset patterns of religion by declaring that real temples of worship were in the hearts of believers. If Christ had been a philosopher, they could have debated him. If he had been a warrior, they could have fought for him. Had he been a religionist, they could have ignored him as an eccentric. But Christ was love. What do you do with that? Gethsemane, my Savior prayed there on Calvary. He died alone. Gethsemane was agony for Christ. In those dark hours, he cried in desperation, "Father, if it be your will, let this cup pass from me." But it wasn't God's will. And Jesus died alone. But the tomb, Jesus left there, I believe. I believe God could have had Jesus resurrected right from the cross when no one was around. Instead, he arranged a full burial with grave clothes, a tomb, and even a Roman seal. But after 3 days, conquering death, Jesus walked out free, leaving for all to see the massive stone rolled away in the empty tomb. And now he lives and reigns forever, I believe. I believe, and he prays for us in heaven, I believe. I believe, and with the ones who've gone before me, I will praise the Prince of Peace. Alleluia, alleluia. I believe, I believe, I believe, I believe. Governor Abbott appoints Murkett to State Board. Governor Greg Abbott appointed Midland County Republican Party Chair Sherry Murkett to the Texas State Board of Public Accountancy for a term set to expire on January 31, 2029. The board protects the public by ensuring that persons issued certificates as CPAs, Certified Public Accountants, possess the necessary education, skills, and capabilities that they perform competently in the profession of public accountancy. Murkett is executive assistant to the principal of Highlander School. She is a member of the Midland County Historical Commission. Previously, she served as a member of the Texas Credit Union Commission. Murkett received an associate degree in management and child development from Midland College. Murkett was one of four appointed to the board, joining Kimberly Crawford, Thomas Nahoff, and Susan Warren. Additionally, the governor named Deborah Seafield as chair. Governor Greg Abbott appointed Midland County Republican Party Chair Sherry Murkett to the State Board of Public Accountancy for a term set to expire on January 31, 2029. Spirit of HEB Project means trees for Midland's House Park. One of Midland's oldest parks got a facelift March 30th with 25 drought-tolerant trees planted by HEB employees with the help of Keep Midland Beautiful's tree keepers and the City of Midland Parks Department. Cedar elms, live oaks, and lacebark elms now grace the walking trail at House Park. Planted for a Spirit of HEB activity, HEB employees from Midland, Odessa, and Big Spring picked up shovels and rakes to plant the trees they purchased for this Spirit of HEB project. Uptown Midland BPW to host Bunko at the Ritz fundraiser. Members of Uptown Midland Business and Professional Women, BPW, are preparing for the upcoming Bunko at the Ritz event to be held from 6 to 9 p.m. on April 21st at Basin PBS located at 203 North Main Street in downtown Midland. All proceeds from the event benefit BPW's scholarship fund to provide scholarships to women over age 25. Visit MidlandBPW.com to purchase table sponsorships and individual tickets.
Women in Midland Make More Than National Median by Ben Schaefer. Women in Midland make $51,243 annually compared to the national median of $49,263, according to a new study by Smartest Dollar. This ranks Midland as the 35th small metro area nationwide for median annual wage for full-time working women. The average annual wage for all full-time workers in Midland is $63,299. Midland is the only small Texas metro area that ranks in the top 40 for median annual wage for women working full-time jobs. Similarly, the study shows that there are no mid-sized Texas metro areas in the top 40 for the same category. When it comes to large metropolitan areas, the Austin, Round Rock, Georgetown area ranks 22nd and Dallas-Fort Worth, Arlington ranks 37th. The report showed 49.2% of women in Midland work full-time, according to the study, ranking in Midland 18th in the small metro areas in the category. The U.S. small metro area with the highest percentage of working women is Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where 59% of women work full-time jobs. Here is a summary of the data for Midland, Texas metro areas. Median annual wage for full-time women adjusted $51,243. Median annual wage for full-time women actual $50,145. Median annual wage for full-time workers adjusted $63,299. Percentage of women that work full-time, 49.2%. Cost of living compared to average, 2.1%. For reference, here are the statistics for the entire United States. Median annual wage for full-time women adjusted, $49,263. Median annual wage for full-time women actual, $49,263. Median annual wage for all full-time workers adjusted, $53,888. Percentage of women that work full-time, 44.1%. Best paying small metros, Boulder, Colorado, $64,531. Barnstable Town, Massachusetts, $61,689. Rochester, Minnesota, $59,925. Also, 35. Midland, $51,243.
Habitat for Humanity receives 21 acres by Mella McEwen. Midland's Habitat for Humanity is planning a new subdivision courtesy of Endeavor Energy Resources. Endeavor recently donated 21 acres of land at the intersection of Fairgrounds Road and Cynthia Drive in a ribbon-cutting ceremony held March 31st. The acreage has the capacity for more than 100 affordable homes for hundreds of qualified Midlanders. We are so grateful to the team at Endeavor for their incredible gift, Midland Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Joey Hopkins told the Reporter Telegram by email. We've seen firsthand their support for Midland as they've sponsored and volunteered on-site with us for the last few years. To be able to run a program like Habitat in the Permian Basin, it takes a community to build a community. Donations like this are critical to keep our development costs down and provide truly affordable homes. Endeavor supports Midland Habitat each year financially and through employee volunteer service opportunities. More than 300 employees spend hundreds of hours helping build homes at Habitat's ReStore or in Habitat's office each year. The donation of the 21 acres is Endeavor's largest land donation to date and its first land donation to Midland Habitat. Working with Midland Habitat is one of EER's most anticipated service opportunities of the year, said Wesley Robertson, land manager for Endeavor and Midland Habitat for Humanity board member in a press release announcing the donation. With financial and volunteer support, we are able to help a local family each year achieve the strength, stability, and self-reliance that comes with home ownership. Our employees truly value being part of this experience. Donating land to Midland Habitat for Humanity was a natural fit for our company, honoring the interest of our employees and Endeavor's commitment to support the Midland Basin. Midland Habitat is one of the Permian's premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the region. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hand up. MHFH uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through home ownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 350 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a home ownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making home ownership a reality for some of the neediest families in the Permian Basin.
Midland College narrows presidential candidates list to 11 by Ben Schaefer. On Wednesday, the Midland College Board of Trustees narrowed down the list of applicants for the college's new president from 52 to 11, according to Board Chairman Steve Kistner. The 11 applicants will become semifinalists and interviewed April 18th. According to Kaiser, the board is very pleased with the applications it has received. The candidates, now semifinalists, have a wealth of experience in community college education, impressive degrees, and seem to be energetic leaders. After the interviews on April 18th and 19th, the college will decide on three or four finalists and then release the names of those who could replace current president Steve Thomas. During the week of May 1st, the finalists will be invited to campus to personally interview with the Board of Trustees and tour the facilities. During that week, there will be a forum of presidential finalist for the public, faculty, and staff to get a glimpse of the candidates. There will be an opportunity for Midland residents and members of the Midland College community to participate in the forum and share their impressions of the finalists. The college hopes to announce its next president by June 1st. Board members are hopeful the next president will take office by July 1st, though the start date has not been confirmed yet.
Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicates its 187th house, Odessa. On March 24th, Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicated its 187th house, located at 801 East Odessa Street, to a deserving homeowner. Made possible through the generous support of churches participating in the Apostle Build, this new home will provide a secure and affordable living space for a hardworking Odessa family. The Apostle Build is a program where local churches sponsor the construction of a habitat house from start to finish. The program is named after the 12 apostles who left their regular occupations to follow Jesus and help build his church. Similarly, participants in the Apostle Build gave their time, resources, and energy to build a home for a family in need. The 187th Habitat Home Build was made possible by the financial contributions and volunteer work of the following churches: Antioch Christian Church, Connections Christian Church, Emmanuel Baptist, First Baptist Odessa, Mid-Cities Church, New Life Fellowship, and The Bridge. Their hard work and dedication helped make this dream a reality for the homeowner, who has put in their own sweat equity and contributed to the building of their new home. MHFH is one of the premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the Permian Basin. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hand up. MHFH uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through homeownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 350 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a homeownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making homeownership a reality for some of the most deserving families in the Permian Basin. Anyone interested in supporting MHFH's efforts in the Permian Basin can contact Jeff Myers, Chief of Staff, at 432-686-8877.
More for homes in Midland by Ben Schaefer. Millennial home buyers in Midland are paying 6% more than all other home buyers, according to a new study by Construction Coverage. The study shows that the median home value for millennial buyers in Midland is $355,000. The median home value for all buyers is $335,000. The median income for millennial homebuyers in Midland is higher than all other buyers at $121,000 and $117,000, respectively. Midland ranks 24th of all U.S. small metropolitan areas for the difference in home value between millennials and all buyers. It is the only Texas city in the top 25 of the category. Midland outspaces Texas, as millennials statewide pay the same $345,000 for a home, which is the same as any other demographic. Small cities where millennials are buying the most expensive homes: Houma, Thibodaux, Louisiana, 13.3%. Saginaw, Michigan, 12.9%. Charleston, West Virginia, 12.1%. Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Iowa, 11.4%. Kankakee, Illinois, 10.8%. Also 24, Midland, 6.0%. Here is a summary of the data for the Midland metro area. Difference in home value between millennials and all other buyers, plus 6.0%. Medium home value, millennial buyers, $355,000. Median home value, all buyers, $335,000. Median income, millennial buyers, $121,000. Median income, all buyers, $117,000. For reference, here are the statistics for the entire United States. Difference in home value, millennials and all other buyers, up 2.7%. Median home value, millennial buyers, $375,000. Median home value, All buyers, 365,000. Median income millennial buyers, 103,000. Median income all buyers, 102,000. For more information, a detailed methodology, and complete results, you can find the original report on Construction Coverage's website, which is located at constructioncoverage.com/research.
My name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Odessa American from Saturday, April 8, 2023, Section A, State and Local News. Court to discuss selling e-cigs to inmates by Royal McGregor. About 8 months ago, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Ector County Commissioner's Court that he believed the jail can make $1 million from selling e-cigarettes to inmates. Griffiths is scheduled to speak to the court about that very topic during Tuesday's meeting. The agenda item of consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the sale of e-cigarettes to inmates at no cost to the county or taxpayers. All proceeds collected will be used at the Ector County Detention Center, will be heard along with others at 10 a.m. in the Commissioner's Courtroom at the Ector County Administration Annex, Room 120, 1010 East 8th Street. Griffiths said inmates can only purchase and have one e-cigarette at a time. Griffiths said before the inmate can purchase another e-cigarette, they have to return their initial e-cigarette purchase. Griffiths also explained that if the e-cigarette has been tampered with, that inmate won't be able to purchase any more e-cigarettes. If it's abused, that inmate will not be eligible to get another one, Griffiths said. Griffiths also will discuss with the court the sale of pizza for inmates at no cost to the county or taxpayers. Though the plans and figures to allow inmates to vape is more concrete, Griffiths said the pizza proposal is still in the works. The court is set to discuss the evaluation, ranking engineers' responses to the request for qualifications for engineering services for the building of the Gardendale Water Distribution Project. This is part of the $4.5 million in ARPA funds that were granted in 2022. Fawcett said this is the first of many steps into the water project in Gardendale. The first is getting the engineering. The next is going out to find all the builders and everybody else to actually install all of this. And then we will be seeing the project breaking ground, he said. National Association names Sul Ross State University alum Outstanding Swine Academic of the Year. Gary Althaus was named the 2023 recipient of the American Association of Swine Veterinarians Outstanding Swine Academic of the Year Award during the association's 54th annual meeting in Aurora, Colorado. The award is given annually to an AASV member employed in academia who has demonstrated excellence in teaching, research, and service to the swine veterinary profession. Faculty members, graduate students, and researchers are eligible to receive this award. Althaus received his Bachelor of Science from Sul Ross State University, his Master's of Science from Texas A&M University, and his DVM and PhD from Iowa State University. He is a board-certified specialist in the American College of Theriogenologists. Althaus joined the School of Veterinary Medicine faculty at the University of Pennsylvania, Penn Vet, in 2001. In 2011, he was named the Marion Dilley and David George Jones Endowed Chair in Animal Reproduction. In 2019, Althaus was appointed Associate Dean of Sustainable Agriculture and Veterinary Practices. With focused efforts on global food supply and food security, Althaus is the founder and director of Penn Vet's Reference Andrology Laboratory, which provides both critical research and clinical services in large animal production. He currently provides services to clientele throughout North America, with a direct impact on about one-third of the U.S. swine breeding herd. He is currently the attending veterinarian for the largest multi-genetics boar stud system in North America, with health and production flow oversight of facilities located in three states. Globally, he provides veterinary consultation services in the remaining Americas, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Collectively, these experiences are woven into Althaus's teaching, research, and outreach efforts in the areas of swine production medicine and theriogenology. My work as a clinician scientist in academia has been personally fulfilling, generating new knowledge, solving problems in the field, and developing and mentoring our future colleagues are the pillars of my career. The AASV's recognition of these efforts reinforces my passion and commitment to the profession, said Althaus. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. In lieu of flowers, the family requests a donation be made in his memory to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or your local Shriners organization. Guest Views, Restoring America Energy Independence. Editor's note, this article was originally published in The Hill by HEAT Chairman August Pfluger and RSC Chairman Kevin Hearn. As Americans spring forward, having spent more of their winter paychecks to heat their homes and fill their tanks, we are rightly wondering when relief will come. Last summer, the average price of a gallon of gas exceeded $5. Americans of every walk of life need assurance that reliable and affordable energy will be readily available to them in the future. Without that assurance, New Englanders will continue to hope for warm weather to alleviate a natural gas crunch, while Californians will continue to fear rolling blackouts as the state's renewable mandates fail to meet grid demand. Rather than provide that relief, President Biden and Democrats in Congress have ignored this daily hardship in pursuit of their radical climate agenda. The Republican Study Committee is dedicated to reversing Democrats' anti-energy actions and restoring America's energy security. That is why we are excited that the House Energy Action Team, HEAT, run for years by former RSC Chairman and now Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana, will be operated by the RSC. The integration of HEAT, known across the nation as a leader in the energy policy arena, into RSC, the interstellar arsenal of the House, is win for the American public. HEAT is committed to restoring and exceeding the energy independence that resulted from the shale revolution. In 2019, the United States became a net exporter of oil and gas for the first time since 1952. The economy thrived as the U.S. reduced its reliance on foreign energy. The Biden administration wasted no time destroying that progress. Following through on his campaign promise to end fossil fuel, Biden canceled the Keystone XL pipeline that should be delivering 830,000 barrels of oil per day to the U.S., and unilaterally blocked oil and gas lease sales in his first week in office. This war on traditional energy was just the tip of the iceberg, as Biden has worked to impose similar draconian policies into America's kitchens and retirement savings. The energy crisis unfolding in Europe demonstrates that energy security is also a matter of national security. Europe's dependence on Russian oil and gas has empowered Vladimir Putin to hold neighboring countries hostage. The U.S. will suffer a similar fate if we fail to onshore our own energy supply. Instead of working to prevent this, Biden continues to rely on foreign nations like Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, begging them to produce more oil. In contrast to President Biden's reliance on foreign nations, House Republicans are taking action to bring relief to consumers and return the U.S. to its role in global energy dominance. Just weeks after reclaiming the majority, we passed legislation to depoliticize the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and prohibit sales of SPR oil to the Chinese Communist Party. House Republicans' commitment to America promised to maximize domestic production, cut the lengthy federal permitting timeline in half, and tackle inflation. H.R. 1, the Lower Energy Costs Act, is a significant first step that HEAT will build upon, ensuring House Republicans deliver on their pro-energy policy promises. H.R. 1 will streamline the Byzantine permitting process to unlock domestic production of all energy supplies, from natural gas to critical minerals to renewables. Under the bill, federal agencies must adhere to reasonable timelines for environmental reviews and coordinate with one another to maximize efficiency. The bill also strengthens our energy security by securing our supply chains, reducing our dependence on foreign adversaries for critical resources, and cutting red tape to facilitate production. It restores the intent of the laws that this administration has ignored by requiring agencies to carry out oil, gas, and geothermal lease sales with due consideration for the security benefits these sources provide. H.R. 1 will lower costs for families by rolling back the Inflation Reduction Act's onerous taxes and fees on energy production, cost that will ultimately be borne by consumers. Even Biden's Energy Department admits they threaten energy security. H.R. 1 is a good step, but it cannot be the only action Congress takes on energy production. Moving forward, HEAT will seek to hold Biden accountable for his damaging anti-energy policies. Similarly, HEAT will outline an America First energy platform that restores our energy independence and protects our natural security. We will offer policy solutions that benefit all Americans, not just those who can afford electric vehicles and premium home appliances. America is blessed with vast natural resources that are essential to human prosperity. We are the world leader in reducing emissions, and the same should be true for energy production. Together, we can unleash our country's limitless potential. Kevin Hearn represents Oklahoma's 1st District and is chairman of the Republican Study Committee. August Pfluger represents the 11th District of Texas and is chairman of the House Energy Action Team.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.